Hi, I'm David Herron. Welcome to the Wilton & Bain podcast series, Outside the Boardroom. In this series, we interview CEOs and leaders about their personal stories, helping to humanise the mythical art of leadership. I'm excited to share these stories as we unpack the motivations and drivers that have helped these amazing people to build their careers. In this episode, I'm joined by Nina Spencer. Nina is not only a non-executive for Wilton & Bain, but she's also got a very impressive career, having started at Accenture, been part of the early days of Alpha, which is a huge success story in the consulting space, growing from small beginnings to a business of over 1,000 people, and now operates as both a non-exec independent director and an entrepreneur with her own business, Adidat. We're going to talk with Nina about how this all started, where her career began, the journey she's been on, and then link that into some of the lessons she's learned and how they can be applied to other professional services firms looking to scale, to senior women operating in what can be quite a male-dominated world in professional services, and also what it's like to have a plural career. So Nina, thank you for coming along. I'm looking forward to talking. So where did it all start? How did your career begin?
Hi, David. Thanks for having me. Great to be here. So as you say, my career really started back at Accenture. I joined their graduate program post-university and really kind of from the outset really enjoyed that consulting dynamic. I think that was really my natural home. And so I was with Accenture for a few years and really enjoyed that experience, actually. I think as a graduate into that marketplace, they really did a good job of training us up, of building a good team. I've still got some really close friends from my kind of start group at Accenture, a good sort of 20 years ago now. So that was a great kind of entry into management consultancy. And then I was fortunate enough to be offered a role at Alpha, as you say, Alpha Financial Markets Consulting, specialist in asset and wealth management consulting. And that had really been around for about a year or so by the time I joined. So I think I was about the eighth or ninth employee into the company. And so then followed that growth journey with Alpha for quite a long time. I think I was there for just over 15 years in total. And we saw the business grow from that kind of office in London of eight of us to, by the time I'd left, I was the global COO and also the CEO of one of their business lines for Alpha Data Solutions, as it was then called. And there was about 1,000 people globally. We had offices in about 12 countries and had really sort of expanded our product offering over that timeline. So I think that growth story was just an huge exciting thing to be part of. We went through in that time 2P transactions followed by an IPO onto AIM in 2017, and equally kind of saw that growth journey kind of ebb and flow over different market conditions, which I think is kind of relevant for where we are today in the world and how those kind of evolutions and change happened to allow us to keep growing over such a long period of time.
Yeah, that's really fascinating background and very exciting. So obviously, Wilton & Bain is a growing professional services firm, although we've not hit the dizzy heights that that Alpha had yet. But certainly the economy has changed quite a lot. And one of the things that I notice as I start running this business for closer to 10 years than five is that loyalty and longevity and being able to stick around and play the long game is really the key to, I guess, benefiting from all of those hard yards. I mean, there must have been various points during that journey where it wasn't all good news. So talk me through some of the highs and lows.
Good question. So I think you're right. And I think if I really boil down, why is it I've always loved consulting? Why is it now that I've moved into kind of a plural NED career and started my own company? It's because I really like building long-term relationships with clients and partners. And I think that's what you do with any kind of professional services organization. It's not about going in and selling a product and walking away. It's about really building those longer term relationships. And that's really been the thing that I think I've personally enjoyed. And I think also is what's really led to the success of the companies that I've been fortunate enough to be part of. And I see a lot of synergies with that, with the way that Wilton & Bain go about your kind of approach to clients here. And as you say, I think the reason for that, and I think where it becomes really important, is as you see these kind of huge global economic shifts over time, really when you look at your client base, I think the role and position you need to be playing within those organizations is one where you're really playing a fundamentally key part in whatever is their largest, most important agenda. So, if I think back to when, the 2008 kind of financial crisis, we were really fortunate because over those years, 2008, 2011, Alpha actually grew quite considerably over that period. And if you kind of look back and assess, well, why, what did we do? How did that happen? Actually, I think it kind of boils down to kind of three things, really. The first one being that we had those kind of really embedded relationships within organizations. And alongside that, we're really focusing on their largest, most strategic transformation change programs within their organization. So the things that quite honestly couldn't just stop because, you know, there was a downturn. So it wasn't kind of the nice, fun to have creative projects that you sometimes get to do in professional services, but it was really kind of the nuts and bolts of, okay, these guys are going through a 3-year IT transformational change program that can't just stop. That's going to continue over this period. It might be tweaked, the scope might be reduced, but, you know, fundamentally that program of work is going to continue. And if we can embed ourselves within that program of work, that's going to stick over that period. So I think that was kind of number one. Number two was really thinking about what are the right propositions, services, opportunities to really support clients with over those tricky periods. So, you know, what are the things which are the kind of services, the kind of solutions that clients need even in an economic downturn? So you talk a lot more about, you know, outsourcing projects, offshoring projects, downsizing, operational rationalization programs. That's where clients would still want and need to be thinking and spending money and time over that period, as opposed to kind of, you know, growth and expansion and fund range expansion and all the things in an economic high point is where I think we'd be offering services. So it was kind of tailoring what we were doing to the market conditions. And then the third one, which again, I think is really relevant today, again, when you look at kind of our current situation, is thinking globally and thinking about, well, where is it today in the current kind of economic global environment? Where is it that the kind of services, products, the relationships that we've built today, where have we got most opportunity to go and realize some potential with them? And if it's not currently in the UK market or the continental Europe market, if that's where the slowdown is currently, but in the US it's growing, in the Middle East it's growing, then, you know, can you pivot and move some of your products and services into other geographies? And I think if I look back over that kind of particularly tricky period, that financial crisis period, I think it was a combination of all those three things that kind of allowed us to kind of get through that and come out the other side ready to, quite frankly, take our first PE steps and then subsequently the IPO. So that's kind of been some learnings that I've reflected upon.
Yeah, and one of the things that I often think about is a piece of advice I was given quite a long time ago, which is when you're running a smallish business, whatever the strategic goals are of tomorrow, the tactical needs or weeds of today tend to get in the way. But I think that consistency over those three themes, and if I wind back on our own journey, or since I got here in 2011, when the business was quite narrow and small, you know, we really had three pillars to our strategy. We were quite deep within a couple of clients, and we wanted to broaden that client base, not just within the sector that they operated in, but more broadly, and focus on working for organizations that are going through transformation and growth. And that's weaved into a lot of our messaging now. And indeed, you know, the title of this podcast is going to be Working with Leaders, Driving Transformation and Growth. The second thing is to do more than executive search. So to your point around trying to offer services that are relevant to the market at the right time, you know, interim management now and typically during a downturn spikes because clients are looking to either variabilize their cost base or accelerate programs, which, as you say, are kind of critical, particularly if they can't or they haven't got budget to spend on consulting firms. And then the third one is internationalization. So, you know, Wilton & Bain has always generated a lot of revenue outside the UK, despite the fact we've not had boots on the ground in all of the countries in which we operate. We're now pretty strong in North America. We're launching out into the Middle East. But I think if there's been one constant post the pandemic, it's been that organizations, countries actually have become more tribal. I wonder how much of that's driven by Brexit and what's been going on here. But actually, I think having local presence is more and more relevant now. So I think we as an organization need to get the balance right between having offices everywhere and very high infrastructure costs versus being able to serve your clients wherever they are. The other thing I think both Alpha and Wilton & Bain have in common is private equity. I wonder how you found private equity coming into the business. Did it help you drive those long-term objectives, or was it hard to step away from the tactical needs of today?
Great question. So I think certainly my experience, I think Alpha's broad experience with PE was incredibly positive, but it was, I suspect, partly due to the fact that, as I say, that investment was kind of post the crash. It was when we were back in a kind of growing market. And so we were doing incredibly well. And so actually kind of PE backed investment when companies are growing, they're scaling, they're hitting their targets is a really comfortable place to be. And so actually we had a really good experience with the two kind of PE organizations that invested in us at different stages. And actually we kind of managed to kind of get the return they were looking for ahead of their plan. And so that just felt like a perhaps kind of slightly artificial environment in terms of PE leadership, because I think when that was the case, what I found, and over that period I was sort of growing into my head of operations COO role, is actually having that external voice at the table was really helpful in being able to come in and say, look, okay, this is where you are today as an organization, this is your geographic reach, this is your headcount, but we understand what companies of your size and shape need to look like to get you to 500 people or to 750 people. And so at this point in time, start thinking about your infrastructure, thinking about your tech stack, thinking about how you're going to kind of, you know, expand culture globally. And actually they kind of gave us, or certainly gave me as COO, kind of a really nice kind of framework to think bigger and think through kind of what the next steps in our growth might look like. And I think having that external input was really helpful. But again, I think we probably did feel a little bit like masters of our own destiny because we were doing well. And then again, it was kind of, you know, Alpha's decision. It was you and the CEO's decision to IPO at the point that we did. So again, that felt like a decision that we were proactively making rather than kind of being asked or told to do, which again was a really nice place to be. And I think on that point, actually, I was going to mention it. I think it's really relevant again for growth generally, and also with Wilton & Bain as well, and conversations that we've been having, is the really interesting thing about geographic expansion and scope, or even expansion into bringing in other teams of people, is how do you, and this is something I find really fascinating, how do you keep the innate part of your culture and your values and your business and the stuff that's got you to where you are today and the stuff that means that you're so successful, how do you keep that but expand it and share it and replicate it or adapt it for different geographies, different markets, different locations? And I think that's a real key, is kind of finding a way to kind of really understand what the essence that's made an organization what it is today, and how do you go about replicating that in the US, where in itself, you know, you're talking about a whole spectrum of different kind of cultural requirements, east to west coast, north to south, and equally across Central Europe and out into Asia. And I really loved that part of my experience, was kind of thinking through how do we take what's made Alpha amazing today and replicate that elsewhere, whilst also bearing in mind there will need to be local differences, cultural requirements, legal requirements around how you kind of manage staff and employees that differ globally, and kind of working out how you really get that right, I think is a really kind of exciting part of the growth journey. That's certainly one I've really enjoyed doing.
There was an interesting poll on LinkedIn actually last week. It wasn't a poll. Someone in my network posed a question around why executive search firms tend to be populated by very high performing individual contributors. And actually that's one of the challenges with building value in executive search firms and probably consulting firms, is how do you harness the power of the pack? And I think interestingly, one of the bits of feedback that came through from that was that if you psychometrically profile those kind of individuals that are very strong individual performers, they tend to have played individual sports at a young age, blah, 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 blah. In our business, that's the opposite. I'm not saying we don't hire people who played individual sport, but we look for team players. And I think as we move into other geographies and we talk to people that have joined us in North America, or as we now move into the Middle East, one of the things they like about us and they're excited about our story is how they plug into that team. And I think that's going to be really, really important. Of course, there's the HSBCism, you're going to be global but local. So yeah, it's nuanced with whichever geography you go into. And even in America, there's cultures within cultures within cultures. And I'm sure, you know, if Asia Pac's on the horizon further down the line, that's just going to be accentuated. But I think you're dead right. Protecting that team culture and that team DNA, it becomes harder, but it's where the sort of secret sauce is, if you like, in building the company.
I totally agree. And I think kind of identifying what those secret sources are, being quite logical and really kind of think it through, write it down, think through what are the bits that you're able to think about adjusting and moving, and what bits just so core to you that is just something that's fundamentally part of the organization and would need to retain anywhere and everywhere. And again, how do you retain that level of team players, people are in it for the greater good of the organization? How do you do that when you're suddenly scaling to double the headcount or triple the headcount in multiple geographies? How do you get that buy-in? How do you communicate to all those different locations when there's a huge difference between people walking into London office, seeing you, David, having that kind of personal interaction with you, respecting you as their leader, you know, having that opportunity to get to know you personally, and you're trying to replicate that with someone in the Middle East or someone in the States that you may see once a year, you may not have seen them since they joined, you know, and actually how do they start to get that kind of buy-in and sense to what you as a leader of the organization are aiming to achieve culturally and what their part in that looks and feels like.
Yeah, and how that transcends into your clients as well.
Yep, absolutely.
Just an aside question, which isn't really related to, well, it is related to Alpha, but it's more related to you, and it, you know, part of my personal reflection, because we both got children that are similar ages, but amidst this crazy journey of growth and scale, you also became a mum and had children. So how did they fit in? Yeah. And how did you make that work for you?
I love talking about this, but I've got two children, two boys who are brilliant. And actually, for me, I actually found perversely that my whole performance, my ability to prioritize, my ability to kind of see the bigger picture just changed fundamentally once I came back to work, having had the kids, actually. And I think I became a better employee and a better leader as a consequence. And I think I was very fortunate, and you know, I say this over and time again to different organizations, is there is a lot of structure and a lot of support that organizations can put in place to support working parents. And again, I really would want to be using kind of working parents terminology, not working mums. I think it's something that we should be sharing much more equally across companies. But kind of working parents, there's a lot that companies can do to create a level playing field. But equally, as an individual, if you are a working parent, then you've also got a responsibility within your home life to make sure that you're set up for success yourself. You know, you need to have a partner or, you know, a family or whoever it is around you that's supporting you to help you be successful. So I always joke that, like, my husband, who is a 6-foot rugby playing prop, is the biggest feminist I've ever known. And that's because he really went into this kind of going, we're both going to have really successful senior careers. We're both going to do it together. We're going to pull equal weights, we're going to do equal tasks at home, and we're going to do equally big things in our careers. And that really has been a really exciting part of my journey of having children, is that they've then seen that, that my two children are being raised in a family where dad does all the cooking, mum turns up to as many sports matches as dad does, you know. And so they've just seen it being kind of completely equal. And my hope is that they go into have their kids in a place where they assume that to be the case. Now, I feel as a personal sense of responsibility to achieve that as well as a corporate one. Alpha gave us a great platform to go back and work and have our kids together and grow together. My husband also works for Alpha. But equally, I think the responsibility was on us to create a framework to allow us to do that successfully.
Yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it? If I look at all the upside of the COVID pandemic, one of the upside for us and for organisations, I think, is the fact that location has become less of a barrier when it comes to hiring people because of, you know, hybrid working, flexible working. At the same time, you can now come into an office on a Monday and there's no one there. So I think as the world sort of, let's say, normalises again, I think all of the upside that businesses have worked to achieve so hard during the pandemic needs to be harnessed. And some of the old world needs to be brought back in as well. You know, I myself pride myself in never really missing a kid's sports fixture. That's always been really important to me. And the upside to working in a place like Wilton & Bain is we recognise that there's lots of people in that category. But continuing to grow that and making sure you don't end up with a two-tiered culture, I think, is also quite important and difficult. Tell me about what you do now, Nina.
Yeah, so I left Alpha end of 2022, and I think at that point had just had such an incredible journey of kind of growth and expansion. I'd learnt a huge amount. And I guess I am a consultant by heart, as I said. And so for me, I'd learnt a huge amount about how to grow and scale and get investment for one company. And the opportunity I saw was, well, how can I use this knowledge and skills and go and work with other organisations to really see how what I've learnt to do with one company, how does that translate? What are the challenges and opportunities within others? And so I decided to kind of finish up at Alpha. And I thought, well, I'll take on some NED roles if I was lucky enough to get some and see how they go. And I've been really fortunate. So I've had kind of 5 so far. I've currently got 4 active roles. And I think they range across a number of different organization types, both in terms of structure. And you know, I've got some listed companies, privately owned companies, some kind of, you know, private shareholder companies, PE backed, as you say. So I think there's a whole spectrum of how they're being funded, and actually what they do really varies as well. But for me, the decision to whether I take a role within an organization as a NED or not is as much about the culture of that organization, the culture of the board, their vision, their ambition, their kind of commitment, as it is what they're actually doing from a practical business perspective. And I think I've been really lucky with the boards I sit on. So I do that and I love those roles, and I've been doing that for kind of the best part of 2 years now. And I thought originally that would be enough and I'd kind of step back and do that and then I'd have all this free time. And then after kind of 4 or 5 months, I think it was my husband again that said to me, Nina, you do realize that work is your hobby and, you know, you're sitting at home really wanting to do more, which was definitely fair. And so that led me to then found the company, as you mentioned, that I founded about 18 months ago. It's called Adidat. It focuses on supporting small cap and AIM listed companies with their ESG strategies, which was just an area that I experienced from a number of angles in different roles. And I knew there to be an opportunity there to support companies with their steps into ESG, but doing it in a very kind of right-sized way that allows them to kind of make decisions that aren't overly burdensome in terms of regulation or investment or focus. So it's helping companies do the right thing, but in a measured way that's going to be sustainable. And I've really loved that. So it's something I'm really passionate about. I've now got a team of 5 working for Adidat and a group of contractors. And yeah, we're very early in our growth journey. So we've survived the first year, which is apparently when 6% of businesses collapse. So take that as a win. And yeah, we're on our kind of journey of growth now, hopefully.
And it's interesting because I was reflecting, I was talking to one of the people in the office. We had our own board meeting last week and we've been going through a bit of a restructure of the business recently. And, you know, I took the decision to brief all of the board members before the board meeting of what was going on. And the questions you asked me weren't really around the numbers. They're around what are we doing to actually make the business better? To your point there around, you know, small businesses not being overly burdensome. I think that conundrum that small businesses are in when they grow between tactical needs of today and strategic goals of tomorrow. I mean, you've got to do both, right? Yeah. But you've got to keep focusing on those things that make the business better. And And when the market gets tough, which it has been, what I see, not just in our sector, but in other companies as well, is they forget that. They forget about the soul. And what did someone say to me? Call it soul or salt. You can't have a great meal without salt, and you can't have a great business without soul, which I really like. So I think clearly, you know, the ESG agenda is apposite for lots of things that are going on in the world at the moment, but it's also incredibly important for making sure that businesses continue to invest and make themselves better. That's been really, really interesting. Thanks, Nina. Really appreciate your time. Some things in there I didn't know, and some things I did as well. So thanks for your support of Wiltner Bain, and good luck with everything.
Thanks so much, David.